putting the profits of the companies before the welfare of the people. The little people don't matter. The little people, many of them have got to the point now where they no longer even vote. And those who vote sometimes are voting along racist, discriminatory, kind of law and order issues instead of facing up to the reality that until there is a government that is there for the people, then we will continue to drift listlessly into that long goodnight.
Thank you for that. Sorry to be such a sour note, but you know, we have to deal with reality, and we appreciate both of you, Sayed Mohsin Abbas, journalist and political commentator, and Fry Hughes, thank you, journalist, author, and activist. And with that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Yacoba Tapwe and the team, it's goodbye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details. Now we enlighten you with verses 162 to 165 of chapter Al-An'am from the Holy Quran, recited by Murtaza Fatemi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. قل إن صلاتي ونسكي ومحيي حياي ومماتي لله رب العالمين لا شريك له وبذلك أمرت وأنا أول المسلمين قل أغير الله أبغي ربا وهو رب كل شيء ولا تكسب كل نفس إلا عليها ولا تزر وازرة أخرى ثم إلى ربكم مرجعكم فينبئكم بما كنتم فيه تختلفون وهو الذي جعلكم خلائف الأرض ورفع بعضكم فوق بعض درجات ليبلوكم فيما آتاكم إن ربك سريع العقاب وإنه لغفور رحيم.
In the name of God, the Compassionate, the Merciful. Say, surely my prayer and my sacrifice and my life and my death are all for Allah, the Lord of the worlds. No associate has He, and this am I commanded, and I am the first of those who submit. Say, what shall I seek, a Lord other than Allah? And He is the Lord of all things. And no soul earns evil but against itself, and no bearer of burden shall bear the burden of another. Then to your Lord is your return, so He will inform you of that in which you differed, and He it is who has made you successors in the land and raised some of you above others by various grades, that He might try you by what He has given you. Surely, your Lord is quick to requite evil, and He is most surely the forgiving, the merciful.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Iran dismisses the latest UN General Assembly's resolution on the situation of human rights in the country, saying it lacks legitimacy and credit. After more than a week of denials, the UK government finally admits there are serious shortages of antibiotics to treat bacterial infections in children. North Korea says it has tested a, quote, high-thrust solid-fuel motor. Thank you for joining us. Our top story this hour: Iran has slammed the latest resolution adopted by the UN General Assembly on the situation of human rights in the country, saying it lacks legitimacy and credit. Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani said the resolution, which was drafted by Canada and supported by the European countries, as well as Israel, reveals the hypocrisy of its sponsors. He said instrumental use of international bodies to mount pressure on Iran is a brazen example of using human rights to achieve short-sighted political goals. Kanani said the sponsors of the resolution are among the violators of all the fundamental principles of human rights in the world. He added, instead of expressing hypocritical concern about Iranians' rights, those countries must stop hosting terrorist groups and comply with the U.S.'s economic terrorism against the Iranian nation. Iran has slammed the fresh sanctions, meanwhile imposed by the European Council on Iranian individuals and entities. Tehran says the sanctions are a political show to put pressure on the Islamic Republic. European officials accuse Iran of what they term widespread use of force against protesters. Tehran dismisses the accusation and says certain Western states are merely fueling the flames of violence in Iran.
Iran has wrapped the European Union over anti-Tehran measures taken by the Council of the European Union. Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian denounced, quote, certain political shows that have been put on display by the Council under the pretext of defending the issue of human rights. The European Council has imposed a slew of fresh sanctions against Iranian natural and legal entities. According to a statement issued by the EU foreign ministers, 20 individuals, along with one entity, the Islamic Republic of Iran Broadcasting, have been sanctioned over alleged human rights abuses. The bloc has also slapped sanctions on four more people and has many entities blacklisted over Tehran's alleged drone supplies to Russia. The bloc's new sanctions include asset freezes and travel bans to the EU. The ministers condemned what they called the widespread use of force by the Iranian authorities against protesters. The European Union last month imposed sanctions on a number of Iranian institutions and individuals, including the 24-hour English-language press TV news channel, over alleged rights violations following the recent foreign-backed riots in the country.
In the case of Iran, big tech is used as a weapon against Iranians. So Iranian voices don't come out. Iranians lose their, if they are opposed to the Western narrative, they get sanctioned. All of the Iranian media is sanctioned. Many individuals have lost their accounts. I have lost my Facebook and Instagram accounts. So these Western big tech companies, they cooperate with Western governments. But in Iran, these same media outlets make threats, they support, they help people make Molotov cocktails, and they help mobilize the rioters.
So several provinces in Iran have witnessed foreign-backed riots in September. The West has been actively pushing the so-called regime change agenda in the form of a hybrid war. Iran says the United States and Britain have been directly involved in what's been going on over the past few months. And on top of that, Iranian security officials have seized a considerable amount of weapons smuggled into the country, the arms provided by certain Western and regional states, as well as spy agencies, were meant to stoke unrest in Iran.
Foreign-backed riots have hit various Iranian provinces since 22-year-old woman Mahsa Amini died at the hospital on September 16th, 3 days after she collapsed at a police station. An investigation has attributed Amini's death to a medical condition rather than alleged beatings by the police. The violent riots have claimed the lives of dozens of people and security forces while also allowing terrorist attacks across the country. In the last 2 months, the terrorists have set fire to public property and tortured several Basiji members and security forces to death. Western states have been hyper-aggressively pushing the regime change agenda in form of hybrid war, making a sheer mockery of international law. Authorities in the US and the EU have openly and brazenly instigated rioters in Iran through official and unofficial channels. Iran's intelligence ministry has said the United States and the United Kingdom were directly involved in the unrest, adding that dozens of terrorists affiliated with the Israeli regime and anti-revolution groups have also been detained in the unrest.
Online, the MEK organization that's funded by and supported by NATO, they've been teaching people how to make Molotov cocktails, how to use weapons, and they've been attacking police bases, military bases, and also we've had terrorist attacks alongside the Pakistani border, in the no man land in Pakistan, and also in northern Iraq from Iraqi Kurdistan.
Iran says its enemies have waged a hybrid war against the Islamic Republic to weaken national solidarity and hinder the country's progress. Officials say huge amounts of weapons have been shipped into the country by Western and regional intelligence services to carry out terrorist attacks and conduct extensive psychological operations in order to stoke dissatisfaction amongst the Iranian people and make them accuse the Iranian administration for the growing insecurity.
Now, the Saudi-led coalition has once again blocked two Yemeni-bound fuel ships from unloading in the Yemeni port city of Hodeidah. The Yemeni government has condemned the blockade as a violation of Yemen's sovereignty. Yusuf Mowry has more from Sana'a.
The Saudi-led coalition has once again detained two fuel ships, preventing them from reaching the crucial western port of Hodeidah. The Yemeni Petroleum Company says the two fuel vessels were detained despite obtaining the necessary permits and being cleared from inspection in the port of Djibouti.
Preventing fuel ships from entering Yemen continues to take its toll on the country's battered economy. It has led to an increase in food prices and basic supplies and has made life harder for the Yemeni people as Saudi Arabia continues its blockade.
Rashid Al-Haddad, an economic expert, says the seizure of the fuel ships is just one of many war tactics employed by the Saudi-led coalition to put pressure on the Yemeni people.
The Saudi aggression is always exerting effort to make life difficult for all Yemenis by depriving them of fuel resources. 70% of fuel enters the country through the port of Hodeidah, which affects 22 million people. The Saudi-led coalition is using this as a war tactic, not against Ansarullah, but against the Yemeni people as a collective punishment.
Considering the expected rise in shipping prices, Dalal, a local fruit merchant, says he will be forced to raise his prices if no fuel enters the country.
This watermelon is normally sold for 1,500 Yemeni riyals when fuel is available. However, whenever they prevent fuel from entering Yemen, the price of this watermelon increases from 1,500 to 3,000 Yemeni riyals.
This blockade has caused an economic crisis. The price of wheat and fuel have increased. We don't have anything and we're not even being paid salaries. We're besieged from all aspects of life.
The Yemeni government says the illegal seizure of Yemeni oil is an act of war and a violation of Yemen's sovereignty, which will be met with force if continued. Yusuf Mowry, Sana'a.
Turning to the United Kingdom now, where the government has finally acknowledged the serious shortages of antibiotics after days of denials. The government has issued serious shortage protocols for three types of drugs, including penicillin and amoxicillin, that is. The protocols are hoped to allow pharmacies to supply alternative medicines as fast as possible. In the meantime, the health ministry says increased demands have left some pharmacies out of stock and unable to meet prescriptions. That's why Prime Minister Rishi Sunak last Wednesday dismissed fears of a national shortage of antibiotics. The UK is struggling with an unexpected surge of infections, with doctors and families reporting difficulty finding some of the most basic treatments. At least 19 children have died from severe cases since September. Now, EU leaders fail to agree on energy security measures necessary to avert an economic disaster in the 27-nation bloc during 2023. At a summit in Brussels, they rubber-stamped an additional €20 billion in aid for Ukraine, despite calls for greater focus on the growing social crisis within the EU itself. Jerome Hughes reports from the Belgian capital.
As they came together for a summit in Brussels, EU leaders were acutely aware that energy storage tanks will run dry in the coming months. There are still major divisions in the EU over a gas price cap and a proposal to buy energy from international suppliers as one single customer.
It is important that we do not outbid each other as member states, but that we use the market power to purchase gas.
It's thought a deal might be finalised on Monday. There are plenty of other divisions within the 27-nation EU. Austria is blocking Romania and Bulgaria from the border-free Schengen area. Meanwhile, funding for Hungary is being withheld over rule of law issues.
Russia is blackmailing us every day. But if we start to blackmail each other, this is not good. And this is absolutely not good for the European Union.
A dark shadow of corruption is hanging over the EU. It emerged last Friday that Qatar has been bribing politicians and officials.
This scandal is a very serious matter indeed, which can shake trust in democracy and the parliamentary system. Thus, it is good that the Belgian authorities are thoroughly investigating.
At their summit, EU leaders refused to be drawn on the question of possible sanctions against Qatar. However, they signed off on more sanctions against Russia and also Iran. The leaders agreed to provide at least 20 billion euro to Ukraine in 2023. Campaigners say they should be doing more for their own citizens.
So many people in poverty, like everything what's going on from the crisis from 2008 until now, nothing changed.
It's clear that things could soon get a lot worse if the EU fails to secure a reliable long-term energy source at the right price. The costly Ukrainian refugee crisis is also growing by the day. So the final EU leader summit of 2022 has now concluded. Analysts say the unprecedented challenges they will face in 2023 could stretch the EU project beyond breaking point. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Tensions continue between the European Union and the United States over Washington's new subsidy plan for green products, with France now urging the bloc to take action in response to the US policy. Earlier, we discussed the trade tensions in our news review program.
Time now for the news review of this bulletin. France's president is asking the European Union to take action against Washington's new subsidy policies, which the bloc fears could deepen economic woes in the Eurozone. Arriving at the EU summit in Brussels, Emmanuel Macron told reporters that the Union must simplify its own subsidy rules to respond to those of the U.S. He said that such a move is necessary in order to ensure fair competition among businesses. Washington has passed a new bill called the Inflation Reduction Act, which contains a package of subsidies for American-made electric vehicles and other green products. Europe says the act violates the World Trade Organization's rules, as it will entice companies to relocate to the U.S. This comes as an energy crunch has already taken a heavy toll on European industries, forcing them to slow production to save fuel. Jerome Hughes, a correspondent from Brussels, joins us. We understand that the French President Emmanuel Macron is now asking the EU to counter this. But we know that he was in the States just a week or so ago, wasn't he? And when he spoke to Biden, telling Biden about how this is unfair overall, generally speaking. So what happened? Wasn't that supposed to be taken up by the U.S.? Or are we looking at two different movements on this, one from the U.S., one from the EU?
Well, Covey, there's no doubt that this is protectionist on behalf of the United States, and it's very similar to the type of measures that we would see Donald Trump take when he was in office. And, of course, the EU is threatening reciprocal measures to try and protect its car industry in particular. But the reality is, I mean, it's been suggested this could potentially develop into an all-out trade war between the EU and the US. But if you speak to experts, they're saying this is never going to happen, especially now, because the EU as a whole, economically and on the energy front, has never been so vulnerable. It's really in a very shaky position. And at the moment, the reality is that although the energy that the United States can give to the EU in terms of liquefied natural gas, it's essential for the EU, but it's simply not enough. So what they're doing is, in terms of their potential energy suppliers, there's no way they can stand on any more feet. So the EU will not respond in any meaningful way, because in 2023 they need the United States LNG, even though it won't be enough. I have to say, and so really that the EU is in a very sort of vulnerable position in terms of what sort of actions it can take. And you know, I mean, so the United States has all the cards effectively in terms of any disputes with the EU. And actually, you know, the United States, many analysts are saying it's the United States policies, it's NATO's policies that has the EU in a situation now where it's cut off all, effectively all of the energy from Russia to a great extent, or to the main extent. This is going to be a really potentially disastrous for the EU in 2023. So they're not going to start standing on Washington's toes.
Okay. Thank you, Jerome Hughes, our correspondent from Brussels. With that, we come to an end for this edition of the News Review. Thanks for tuning in.
And that brings an end to the International Bulletin for this hour.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Supplication on Fridays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, the first before the bringing forth and the giving of life, and the last after the annihilation of all things. The All-Knowing who forgets not him who remembers him, and decreases not him who thanks him, and disappoints not him who supplicates him, and cuts not off the hope of him who hopes in him. O Allah, I call thee to witness, and thou art sufficient witness, and I call to witness all thy angels, and the inhabitants of thy heavens, and the bearers of thy throne, and thy prophets and thy messengers whom thou hast sent out, and the various kinds of creatures thou hast brought forth, that I bear witness that thou art Allah. There is no God but thou, thou alone, who hast no associate nor any equal, and thy word has no failing nor any change. And that Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, is thy servant and thy messenger. He delivered to the servants that with which thou charged him, and he struggled for Allah as is his due. And he gave the good news of the truth of reward, and he warned of the veracity of punishment. O Allah, make me firm in thy religion as long as thou keepst me alive, and make not my heart to swerve after thou hast guided me, and give me mercy from thee. Surely thou art the giver. Bless Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, and make me one of his followers and his partisans, and muster me in his band, and give me the success of accomplishing the obligatory observance of Friday, and performing the acts of obedience which thou hast made incumbent upon me within it, and receiving the bestowal which thou hast apportioned for its people on the day of recompense. Thou, only thou, art the mighty ones.
In the limelight. This year marks the 74th anniversary of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Although the modern concept of rights and human rights has been raised throughout the discourse of the West since 17th century, the historical evidence shows that while the hypocritical West has been engaged in murder, looting, mass murder, torture, pressure, enslavement, slavery over the past three centuries, its intellectuals and thinkers have been promulgating human rights law for the world. And today, it is the mask of human rights that gives a human gesture to their liberal democracy. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. Tehran Times had an eye on this issue, writing, "Western countries, and most notably America, are using the power of media to cover their true face with the mask of human rights and deceive the public opinion in the world. They talk about the rights of the nations, while the nations, more than ever before, feel the fire of their seditions. They pretend defense for the rights of minorities, women and children, and asylum seekers, but have been constantly and regularly committing crimes against the majorities around the world. They claim that we are committed to human rights, but in practice, they act differently. They have now turned human rights into a tool to get involved in the affairs of other countries and blackmail them. When one looks at their policy toward Palestine, particularly Gaza, it becomes quite clear how they behave dishonestly. Gaza is the most oppressed place on the earth where people are denied basic rights. It has got the title of the largest open-air prison, and once in a while, the Zionist regime attacks them to destroy the remaining vital infrastructure. They are tortured just because America and some Western powers are backing the racist regime of Israel. Or consider the JCPOA agreement between Iran and 5+1 nations. The United States openly violated UN Security Council Resolution 2231 that confirmed the deal, and the European parties to the agreement refused to honor their obligations. Now, like the pirates of the Caribbean, they have turned it into a tool to blackmail Iran. This is their nature. They're just caring for their own interests at the cost of the rights of others." The practical record of America, England, and France over the past three centuries is indicative of the fact that Western countries have a hypocritical approach toward human rights. We try to cast more light on the crimes of Western regimes by mentioning some concrete examples. America. American help to the Saudis' genocidal acts against Yemenis, which constitute examples of war crimes and crimes against humanity over the past 8 years, are before our eyes. These crimes are completely contrary to the principles of human rights and the international humanitarian rights law, stated the United Nations Charter. Consider the Guantanamo prison. Why did the Americans take place and keep them there in most difficult conditions for several years without trial? Or the issue of the Abu Ghraib prison in Iraq and the tortures that took place there, helping to create ISIS or Daesh, which was explicitly acknowledged by President Trump in his election campaigns. In various cases, Americans helped ISIS to steal the Iraqi and Syrian oils and occasionally help the ringleaders to escape from possible capture. Inside America, we are also witnessing how the issue of human rights is clearly violated by the ruling U.S. establishment. The freedom to sell and carry weapons in the U.S. is the reason why so many killings take place in this country. You see that once in a while, a nervous or crazy person runs amok in school, university, or market, and fires at people and make many families mournful. There is a big question that why, despite all these tragic deaths, the sale of weapons, it is not stopped. It's clear that American governments are under the influence of these companies that make huge benefits from arms sales. The criminal behavior of the American government and the American police towards the black people. There are numerous instances in which the blacks are subjected to different kinds of injustice or even killed. In such cases, the judicial system holds a sham trial that in most cases lead to the release of the convict. The history of America is replete with flagrant violation of the rights of the people of color, especially the blacks. And about the France. In recent history, France has been characterized as a champion of human rights in artistic and intellectual circles. However, the crimes that France committed during colonialism, especially in Africa, is not highlighted. Remember what the French did in Algeria. They also committed crimes in Morocco and Tunisia. France was once hosting one of the most violent terrorist grouplets in the world. It was the home to leaders of the MKO terrorist grouplet, whose members committed numerous acts of terror in Iran in the early years of 1979 Islamic Revolution. In 1981, through bomb blast, they killed the president, prime minister, and head of the Iranian judiciary, along with 70 other political and legislative figures. And according to the available statistics, they martyred 12,000 ordinary people. However, they took shelter in France, which portrays itself as a champion of human rights and freedom. Or right now, consider the Yellow Vest protesters who have been holding rallies in Paris. They have been suppressed and a number of them have been blinded. This is the way they treat their own people. However, they criticize other countries to uphold human rights. In England, this country filled its treasury by colonizing and looting eastern countries, mainly the Indian subcontinent, and it created poverty and hunger for the countries under its rule. The British had a ruthless economic agenda when it came to operating in India, and that did not include empathy for native citizens. Under the British Raj, India suffered countless famines, but the worst hit was Bengal. The first of these was in 1770, followed by severe ones in 1783, 1866, 1873, 1892, 1897, and lastly, 1943-44. Also on April 13, 1919, hundreds of unarmed men, women, and children were gunned down by British troops at Jallianwala Bagh, a walled garden in Amritsar, falling unrest in northern Indian city. The British government, which ruled India at the time, put the death toll at 379, while Indian freedom fighters said nearly 1,000 people were killed. And therefore, the main problem regarding human rights law is that the drafters themselves are disproportionately and disappointingly are the main violators, and they have created a deep gap between what is lectured and what happens in practice. This hypocrisy of the Westerners is now evident with the awareness of the nations more than ever before. In practice, European countries and the U.S. literally committed all kinds of crimes all over the world. Well, these are the masterpieces of Western civilization and Western liberal democracy. It is true that the discourse and theoretical apparatus to realize this role outside the Western narrative of law has not yet evolved, but there are many flaws. This entails the necessity to investigate and create discourse around alternatives.
IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Midstream.
It is an exceptional opportunity for the Israeli Mossad, which never hesitates to penetrate the Lebanese arena in every way possible, especially since the financial and economic hardships that hit the country 3 years ago. It now can be said that Israel has fully invaded Lebanon with espionage. Over the past months, the Information Division of the Lebanese Internal Security Forces has been active in arresting networks dealing with the Mossad, whose number exceeded 185 as of the date of writing this report. The arrests Lebanon makes continues on an almost daily basis, to a point that this file of spy activity may require 2 years of arrests, and the number of detainees may exceed thousands. The Israeli entity has recruited a huge number of networks to an extent that the Mossad is facing a glut in its network of Lebanese spying agents. The Zionist Mossad has become so saturated with Lebanese spies that it dropped many of those moles at the first mistake they made, as per investigations with agents that the Mossad abandoned after they failed to serve on their very first case. Lebanese security sources revealed that this huge surge of spy activity increased in an unprecedented way with the onset of the economic crisis at the end of 2019. Since then, the Information Division has monitored large movements and contacts of Lebanese citizens from different sects and regions with the enemy. According to the Lebanese authorities, this surge is due to many reasons, the most prominent of which is the economic crisis affecting the lives of the Lebanese, which led to a decline in purchasing power and a decrease in the level of income, damaging the lifestyle to which they were accustomed to before the crisis. This new reality prompted many Lebanese to search for an external source of income in search of fresh U.S. dollars, albeit through online work or in exchange for some services that can be performed to earn a quick buck. Investigations with the detainees indicate that some of them explicitly admitted that they had resorted on their own free will to the Mossad and offered espionage services by communicating with the agency via its official website. Another reason for the surge in spy activity is the lack of job opportunities in Lebanon, which prompted a large segment of young people to look for jobs outside the country. Approximately 1 million citizens uploaded their resumes online during the past 4 years in search for job opportunities without knowing the destination to which they were sent, and most of them were poured into the Mossad database in one way or another. The number of detained spies in Lebanon is considered a record compared to previous years, which many observers interpret as an Israeli exploitation of the economic crisis that has dramatically increased poverty rates in Lebanon, allowing Zionist Israel to recruit traitors at a very cheap cost. Welcome to the Middle East Stream. I'm Marwa Osman. ...170 Israeli networks are under investigation out of thousands estimated by Lebanese security agencies to include more than 10,000 spies on Lebanese soil after Israel monitored more than a million CVs submitted by Lebanese citizens online during the past 3 years under the weight of the dire need for fresh U.S. dollar payments. The economic collapse in Lebanon has taken its toll on the country in many ways, but it seems that it is not the only reason for treason in this Middle Eastern country. Several collaborators admitted that they continued their collaboration with the Mossad out of sheer opposition to their national Lebanese resistance. To discuss this issue with us from Beirut is Mr. Hassan Hijazi, expert in Zionist affairs and a political commentator. Thank you for being with us, Mr. Hijazi. Now, Lebanon has arrested 185 civilians suspected of working for the Israeli spy agency Mossad since October 2019. That's the year that our country, Lebanon, was battered by a severe economic crisis and financial tragedy. It is truly baffling for me to read these numbers, 185 in 3 years. However, are economic hardships in a country like Lebanon enough reason to betray one's country and to become a spy for the Israeli Mossad? I mean, this is an enemy that has carpet bombed their cities down to rubble many times, and they still want to be spies for Israel.
The economic factor plays a major role in the activity of the Zionist intelligence agencies and the Mossad in specific. The Mossad usually looks for opportunities within the crisis that hit Lebanon in order to recruit spies by presenting them with financial temptations. It does not necessarily have to be clear and direct implication process by the Mossad, but rather an exploitation of the financial hardship and the presentation of offers for different positions for fake companies that claim that they want to conclude work contracts with their new employees, and then they attract citizens who unknowingly apply for the job. The Mossad studies these people and learns about the nature of their work and the nature of their livelihood, and then chooses whomever they find fit to drag them into the quagmire of espionage. Then the occupation resorts to withdrawing information from these people about cases that may at first be normal issues, that do not suggest in any way to those who deal with this firm that they are dealing with the Israeli Mossad. Then the matter develops to further recruiting these people under the pretext of offering financial inducements to benefit from collecting sensitive information. At that point, people might realize that they have been implicated in a foreign intelligence service. They may not know whether it was the Mossad or another security agency. But in some cases, according to what the investigations revealed, some of the citizens discovered that they were dealing with the Zionist Mossad and decided to continue the espionage process. There is no doubt that the Zionist entity is taking advantage of the financial hardship, considering that this issue may provide a fertile ground for recruiting espionage agents. There are always those who might fall and become weak in front of financial temptations and urgent economic needs and dive further into the quagmire of espionage, without realizing, in the end, the seriousness of this issue. only to discover after that that they have been involved in a serious case that will take them to prison or even get them killed.
Well, Mr. Hijazi, although Lebanon remains technically in a state of war with the Zionist occupation, there has been no direct confrontation between the Lebanese side and the Zionist occupation side since the war in 2006. Nevertheless, Israel's espionage activities in Lebanon keep on just rising. They continue on and never cease. In what ways can that specifically hurt the government and the resistance as well?
The occupation is always in a state of preparation for war. It always considers the issue of collecting information part of its battle, even if the actual military battle is suspended. The occupation is aware of the sensitivity of the Lebanese reality in relation to the occupying entity. There is the force that Hezbollah has built on the political, military, and other levels, which poses a fundamental danger to the occupying entity. The occupation cannot ignore or overlook this critical matter. Israel mobilizes greater skills in order to collect information and learn about what might happen in this arena. Therefore, it may resort to methods to stir up strife and disagreements and strengthen the internal division amongst the Lebanese. This issue has direct effects on the political reality because it contributes to inflaming public opinion and inciting the Lebanese against one another. We witnessed in the investigations with some of the spies that they were receiving sums of money in exchange for their activity on social media and in exchange for articles they wrote in the press to incite resistance and create a public opinion opposing and hostile to the resistance at home. Without a doubt, this issue has an impact on the political reality and increases the complications for the Lebanese government to get out of the crisis. The resistance is also aware of the sensitivity of this matter and is aware that the occupation is seeking to build a very large bank of targets around its sites and about the method of spreading its sensitive military equipment. Consequently, the resistance resorts to various methods to reduce the size of the penetration of the Zionists into the Lebanese arena and to prevent the occupation from building this bank of targets by blocking intelligence information. Mainly because the occupation greatly benefits from this information in any future war and transforms this information and translates it into targets that they end up striking on land, which often causes human casualties amongst civilians and destroys the Lebanese infrastructure, under the pretext that the occupation has some information about facilities that may belong to the resistance.
How would the Lebanese resistance in Lebanon deal with such a growing challenge? I mean, let's say they were able to fixate a spy network. How would they deal with that?
The truth is that these issues are kept secret and we do not receive much information about them in the Lebanese media. However, there is a clarity in the existing cooperation between the Resistance Security Service and the official Lebanese security services. There is an attempt to share information to take advantage of all the means available to the resistance in order to pursue these spying networks. There is a permanent and continuous effort to expose these networks and gather information about them in order to monitor any pathway through which the occupation can penetrate the Lebanese reality by recruiting agents, whether through the virtual space, through social media, or through the old traditional means of recruitment. The resistance is present in its capabilities and apparatuses at this level, and it cooperates with the security services in order to combat this phenomenon and pursue spying agents to block the Zionists from gathering information from the Lebanese arena, whether against the resistance or the state or other groups present operating in Lebanon. This cooperation aims to find the kind of mechanism that can mitigate the size of the Zionist penetration into the Lebanese arena.
I want to thank you very much, Mr. Hassan Hijazi, expert in Zionist affairs and political commentator, for joining us to talk about this very pressing matter inside Lebanon and against the Lebanese resistance. Thank you for your contribution. Please stay tuned because next we will be talking how Jenin is facing Zionist fascism.
This is Midstream, and here is IRIB English Radio. Dear listeners, in this weekly program, Marvo Osman discusses two important issues related to West Asia region with two political analysts. Midstream is with you every Friday on IRIB English Radio.
The closer the future Israeli government is to seeing light, the higher the level of terrorism and criminality is becoming in the occupied Palestinian territories, which would clearly outline the features of the new phase that the Palestinians are embarking on, which is filled with grim and dangerous challenges. Despite the weight of the massacre committed by the enemy last week in the Jenin camp, which caused grief and anger throughout Palestine, the resistance's insistence on clashing with the occupation and the state of popular support it enjoys, especially in the West Bank, indicate that the coming Israeli breaking waves aggression might not do more than what the first breaking waves had already done. Jenin faces Zionist fascism in this following report.
After a series of assassinations and arrests in Jenin and Nablus, the resistance in both cities is still sticking to its vow and position to continue resisting and confronting the Zionist occupation army with its incursions in the occupied areas of the West Bank. In the meantime, the resistance groups in the West Bank, especially the Jenin Brigades and the Lion's Den Battalions, are working to develop their military and security activities. Zionist media reported lately that the Palestinian fighters in the West Bank currently possess high-quality rifles, claiming that clashes that were once confined to rock-throwing have now become street gunfights. It was no coincidence that on Thursday, the 8th of December, the Palestinians bid farewell to five martyrs who were killed by the bullets of the occupation on the 35th anniversary of the outbreak of the First Palestinian Intifada. In a day burdened with sadness and anger that the occupied territories lived from north to south following the enemy's massacre in Jenin, which led to the fall of three new martyrs, Ata Shalebi, 46 years old, Tariq Dajem, 29 years old, and Sidqi Zakarne, 29 years old, during armed clashes described as the most violent this year. At the early hours of dawn on Friday, December 9, Zionist occupation patrols accompanied by huge military bulldozers stormed the city of Jenin and its camp from all entrances, occupied many buildings and set up sniper teams on top of them after special forces had infiltrated before them. Following the raid, which the enemy claimed was aimed at arresting one of the resistance fighters involved in the booby trapping of a vehicle that exploded weeks ago and was intended to carry out a commando operation, the resistance fighters engaged in armed clashes, during which they targeted the occupation forces with heavy bullets and homemade explosive devices, according to what was announced by the Martyr Azzedine al-Qassam Brigades and the Jenin Brigade and the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigades, confirming that direct losses occurred among the enemy soldiers whose cries were heard by Jenin residents, while eyewitnesses confirmed the presence of Israeli ambulances at the site. The enemy's escalation of crimes in the occupied Palestinian territories comes at a time when the racist right-wing government is close to seeing light. The Jenin massacre coincided with the announcement that the Prime Minister-designate Benjamin Netanyahu had reached an agreement with the religious right-wing Shas party to include it in the coalition, in exchange for its president Aryeh Deri taking over the interior and health ministries during the first half of the new government's term and the finance ministry in the second half. Thus, the pillars of the fascist coalition are completed, after Netanyahu also reached an agreement with the far-right religious Zionism party that its leader Bezalel Smotrich would assume the Ministry of Finance for a period of 2 years. This formation reinforces expectations that the occupied territories will witness an explosion that seems inevitable, in light of head of the Otzma Yehudit party, Itamar Ben-Gvir, and Bezalel Smotrich taking over the departments and ministries directly related to the Palestinians.
Now to discuss this issue with us from Jenin camp is Mr. Mohammad Jradat, political commentator and author. Thank you very much for being with us, Mr. Mohammad. Now, it was no coincidence that last Thursday the Palestinians actually bid farewell to five martyrs who were killed by the bullets of the Zionist occupation, which coincided with the 35th anniversary of the First Intifada in occupied Palestine. What are the indications of such a fierce confrontation 35 years later?
Assalamu alaykum, yaatikum al-afiyah.
Peace be upon you. These brutal attacks launched by the Israeli occupation on Jenin have gone beyond last week to the present day. Tonight, for example, more martyrs fell successively, the last of which was the 15-year-old child martyr, Jana Zakarni, who was killed by the occupier with 7 bullets while she was on the roof of her house during an attack on the Bayadir area in the city of Jenin. This brutal attack, which coincided with the 35th anniversary of the First Intifada, reflects Israel's insistence on eliminating the Palestinian people on the one hand, humiliating them, bringing them to their knees, and cauterizing their consciousness. On the other hand, the Palestinian people, through their available primitive capabilities, spare no effort in inflicting losses to the ranks of the Zionist enemy. On the other hand, the Palestinian people, through their available primitive capabilities, spare no effort in inflicting losses to the ranks of the Zionist enemy. Therefore, with every incursion into Jenin, in particular, and into Nablus, the resistance fighters who are armed with simple automatic rifles and young men carrying their stones are pouring into the streets and into the alleys to confront this fortified Israeli war mechanism, which is protected by drones and helicopters that storm the Palestinian areas to attack them and inflict as many losses as possible. Jenin, a small city in the north of the West Bank, presented more than 80 martyrs during these months. But it is a city in which the Jenin Brigade and young men from the Lions Brigades and Al-Quds Brigades took it upon themselves to restore the glow of resistance in the northern West Bank. Dozens of heroes emerged from among them who rubbed the nose of this occupier with dirt from time to time. This confrontation continues to this day. Today there was a security incident between the Israeli security services and the Jenin battalion, and so the series of confrontation continues until Allah wishes otherwise.
Mr. Muhammad, the enemy's escalation comes at a time when the racist right-wing government led by Benjamin Netanyahu is being prepared to be launched in the Zionist entity. We have seen Netanyahu doing agreements with the right-wing Shas party, the head of the party, Aryeh Deri, and also with other fascist coalition members. How will this be reflected on the Palestinian natives, especially in besieged Jenin right now?
The Shas party, the Jewish Tzatura party, and the Likud party are normal parties in the frequent right-wing fascist Zionist governments. What is new in this brutal coalition formation is the entry of the religious Zionist party with 14 seats in the Zionist Knesset. This development is the master of the situation. For Deri, the leader of Shas, to take over the Ministry of Health and Finance, who was previously arrested several times on the charges of corruption, theft and embezzlement, as are most of the leaders of Shas and Yehudi Tzatura, have been arrested in connection with thefts. It is surprising and strange that Itamar Ben-Gavir and Smotrich became in the first term in charge of the Ministry of Finance and the Civil Judiciary in the West Bank. We are talking about the West Bank security as seen inside the Israeli Ministry of War. Ben-Gavir takes over the Ministry of National Security with an expansion of powers. This very huge development is the master of the situation now, so that Netanyahu, although he appears as a swollen peacock, has become a hostage and captive in the hands of those whom the Israeli Knesset has never included. In 1984, Kahana entered the Knesset and was expelled by Shamir and the Knesset members at the time. But today we see Smotrich and Ben-Gavir entering the Knesset, who are Kahana's students. They call for the death of the Arabs and for the burning of Al-Aqsa Mosque, and they call for all the racist slogans that the Zionist entity has never reached before. Here they are on the Knesset seats and on the seats of active ministries in the government. They control the heartbeat of the Palestinian people, not only in the occupied interior but also in the West Bank. Therefore, this turmoil will undoubtedly be reflected in the development of events in Jenin, Nablus and the West Bank, so that the clash continues and we may even witness a boiling state in the coming months when this unprecedented fascist camp in the history of this entity takes over the military and security field. Today, the Israeli police, which Ben-Gavir will lead, has a military base in the heart of the Israeli army in the south. This means that Ben-Gavir's Al-Yammam unit and the border guard will be more active in the northern part of the West Bank, igniting the region in a broader way. When the Palestinian martyr Ammar was executed a few days ago in the Hawara accident, the criminal Ben-Gvir tweeted and conceded that the killing of Ammar was a blessed operation, even though it was a crime that took place in broad daylight in front of the entire world and was, without any doubt, a cold-blooded execution.
Well, in any case, the recent weeks in the West Bank have laid down a very clear equation based on which the Israeli policy in the future will be against the Palestinian natives, that it will depend on more terrorism, just like the operation that you just spoke about right now, the actual execution of a Palestinian in the broad daylight in the streets of occupying Palestine. Will this fact have any implications on the normalizing Arab regimes with the Zionist entity who made the famous or infamous, if I may, Abraham Accord?
The normalizing regimes with the occupation entity have removed all masks from their faces. Recently, the right-wing fascist Zionist parties organized visits to Al-Aqsa Mosque and invited the ambassadors of the countries of the world. The UAE ambassador was actively involved, while the ambassadors of the European Union, for example, abstained. Europe has realized that it is facing a racist political and security development unprecedented in the history of international relations in the region. But the United Arab Emirates, for example, did not realize this. Turkey, in the words of Erdogan, have said that his government congratulated Netanyahu and said that this government is the one that will make peace. Therefore, when we talk about the current countries of normalization, these countries do not care about all these developments inside Palestine. They are countries that look after their own interests, although there are no interests in reality, because there is no real relationship between the Zionist entity and these countries. We have seen the Arab peoples, the Arab teams, and the Arab masses at the World Cup in Qatar, how they celebrated and still celebrated the Palestinian flag and the injustice afflicting Palestine, and we saw how they were all hostile to the Israeli presence that overwhelmed Qatar from one end to the other. Therefore, unfortunately, these countries, including Bahrain, received Herzog after the last elections. These countries support these fascist developments within the Israeli camp. So the Arab nation, whether at the level of the region, the Middle East, and the world as a whole, is facing two sides, and there is no third side. Either you are on the side of the Palestinian people, or you are against them. There is no gray area.
Definitely.